everybody, and welcome to the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. We're coming rain, shine, or anything in between. We're here to deliver to you the Kansas State sporting news that you so love. I'm Ace Edwards, right alongside
Connor Balthazar.
And welcome to this week's weekly recap, where it's only really two sports that we're covering this week because women hasn't played yet, but they will be playing the day that this releases, and Connor and I will be in attendance and almost certainly enjoying the experience. But before we get started, just a few preliminary notes. Let's all thank the first sponsor of the show, and that is Greg Arthur. If you want to support the show alongside him, please be sure to check out the official supporters link in our podcast and Twitter bios. You can support us for as little as $1 a month, and it really goes a long way towards helping us out as two, I'm not going to say poor, but I'm just going to say law students, which carries itself a connotation. But if you also want to help out the show without spending any money, you can always leave a review to help get the show out there. But let's dive straight in to the Batcats, because trust me, we want to start with the Batcats. And since Connor did such a wonderful job last week covering the historic series up against Cincy, but it was really just the one historic game, all we have to do is cover the Missouri State Series and then Wichita State. But starting with the first game of the Missouri State Series, K-State ended up walking away victorious in a sweep of all three games, which was massive for K-State's RPI and a Missouri State squad that made the tournament last year. And just a 7-3 victory with no errors, which the errors part is getting increasingly important, as we've noticed in these last couple of weeks. But overall, pretty impressive offensive performance, with the standouts being people like Brendan Jones hitting a home run and going 3-for-5 with an RBI. Haylen Culpepper only going 1-for-4, though. Brady Day going 2-for-3 with a walk as well as a double. And then, of course, Rafael Pelletier down the lineup hit a Rafael Pella home run. That didn't work quite as well in my head. But, you know, some pretty solid offensive performances top to bottom. So the bats were really going to get 9, or rather to get 7, but the pitching performances were also pretty solid on the day as well.
Yeah, so Josh Wintrob got the start on Friday. Borma's moved to the weekend, or to the last spot on Sunday. But Wintrob went 4 1/3 in this one. 7 hits, 2 earned runs, and then he got 4 strikeouts as well. So a lot of hits given up. Definitely could have done a little bit better. But not the worst start in the world, only giving up 2 runs. Adam Arthur, we've been seeing a lot of the true freshman early in his career. He went 1 1/3, 1 hit, 1 earned run, a walk, and a strikeout. And he did all of that in just 13 pitches. Then Mason Buss only pitches 1/3 of an inning, gives up a hit, and then forces a flyout. And he gets credit with a win for this one. Congrats to you, Mason Buss.
Good job, Mason Buss.
And then, of course, Jackson Wentworth. 3 innings pitched, 7 strikeouts in 30 pitches, induced a couple of groundouts as well. He's just been electric as of late. He got the save in this one for his 3rd of the year. He's been pretty incredible, it goes without saying, honestly, at this point this year. But he has, in the absence of Tyson Naber, stepped up to be really just as good.
Yeah, which if you would have told me that Jack Wentworth would have been our closing pitcher within like a month, you wouldn't have even had to give me the context of Tyson Nabers being injured for me to be terrified. But Jack Wentworth has really stepped up after last year, where if I remember correctly, he was borderline shut down in part due to injury and part due to performance. But he's really come back with a very different pitching style than he had last year. He's relying a lot more on his curveball, his changeup, while still keeping that 93-94 velocity on his fastball. It's really working out for him. And I think he may be throwing a knuckle curve, or his changeup has an ungodly amount of break. Because if you look at his spin rates, they're really low for curveball standards, but the break is so ridiculous because it just like falls out of the air, which is a normal like hammer or knuckle curve ball behavior. But Jack Wentworth has been massive in stepping up. in the absence of Tyson Nabers, which that just makes me think that we may have two legitimate closing pitcher candidates. So say we're in three consecutive straight games, which we probably will end up being in three of those games, even as we get deeper into conference play, we don't have to say, okay, Tyson, you need to go pitch two innings on three straight days. Or if we're just in one close game, we could have Jack be the setup man and have that entire back end of the bullpen be the, oh, I believe it was Ryan Madsen, Wade Davis to Greg Holland combination in the 2015-16 Royals, which that is still probably my favorite combination of relievers ever. Yes, I am a Kansas City Royals fan, but, you know, it's been massive to step up that way. So do you have anything else to say about the first game?
No, but this was a game that started out a little poor for K-State, giving up a run in the first. But this was multiple times throughout this game Missouri State led. But like we've seen from K-State baseball recently, they're really good at rallying, it seems like. It seems like they've really been able to add that to their portfolio. We've seen that from them in the past, but this year in particular, as of late, they've done really well at having a big inning when they're behind.
Yeah, which is a good skill to have, the ability to have a, you know, just summon a comeback. Speaking of comebacks, the next game of the series, which was a 12-6 Wildcat victory, it wasn't looking very good for the majority of it, with it at one point being a 6-2 ball game, and then K-State explodes for 8 in the 7th inning. So, you know, average Batcat behavior.
Yeah, this was a yet another game that falls into the same little area. But K-State really hit the ball very well today in that game. Only had 3 strikeouts as a team, and 2 of them were from Nick English. But drew 5 walks and generally just hit the ball really well. 15 for 37 as a team is pretty phenomenal. 3-5 for Chuck Ingram with a couple of RBIs and a towering home run. Brendan Jones, 1-for-4 with a walk. Halen Culpepper had a good day, 3-for-4, 2 RBIs. He didn't hit with a ton of power in this series, but he was just finding the gaps where he hasn't been able to as much recently. He added a sacrifice fly as well. Then Brady Day, he went 2-for-4, drew a walk as well, then had a double and a home run. Brady Day, after only having 3 home runs all of last year, he's already got, I think, 6 mm-hmm. this year.
He's also batting at .400.
Yeah, Brady Day has been nothing short of phenomenal this season, and is playing himself into an even higher draft pick. Nick English played and went 1-for-4. He added a double. Then Jaden Parsons, he played and went 2-for-5 with 2 RBIs. We've seen a little bit more Parsons as of late. Pelletier went 1-for-4. Lotus 1-for-3 with a walk. David Bishop 0-for-3, and Caden Phillips 1-for-2 with a huge 2 RBI single, I believe, at one point during the big rally. And Daniel Rivera, he pinch ran and ended up subbing into play 3rd. He scored a run. Never came to the plate, though. But really, there weren't many K-State players that had bad days at the plate. Even David Bishop, he did have an RBI, I believe, on a fielder's choice. Even though he went 0-for, he was the only cat to get to the plate that didn't get a hit. But he still was able to do something productive. So, really, really good day for K-State.
Yeah. In terms of on the mound, Jacob Frost got beat up pretty bad in his outing. He only goes 3 2/3, giving up 6 hits and 8 hits to 6 earned runs, 2 walks, only 4 strikeouts, and hit a guy. But then the back end of the bullpen really just sort of helped calm everything down. Cole Weisenbaker, who's been, I'm not going to mince words, Cole Weisenbaker has been pretty bad earlier in the season. He came in and was just a rock for 3 1/3 innings, not giving up a single hit or a single run, only walking one person and getting 6 strikeouts. That's massive for Cole Weisenbaker, just that outing to give a guy confidence who's been getting hit around a little bit. And then immediately afterwards, Blake Dean finishes the game by going two innings, only giving up two hits, one strikeout, only one wild pitch on 26 pitches. So the back end of the bullpen here is two young guys really stepping up to sort of right the ship after a shaky start, which I think the starting pitching at this point is what it is. I think you're going to get anywhere from 3 to 6 runs given up on like your average day. So the back end of the bullpen really needs to step up. It actually does the bullpen in general. And during this Missouri State series, they did. They stepped up in a massive way. And that even extends in a little bit into the third game, which K-State ended up winning 11-3. Owen Borima had the start. So congratulations, Owen Borima. I think we probably may have just moved him to Sunday because he was playing some weekday.
Yeah, he started that weekday game against Tennessee, kind of throws his schedule off, and I think we're probably just going to leave him on that Sunday frame until we find a way in our schedule to like get him an easy day on Sunday or just shut him down for a weekend or have a gap in the schedule.
Get him a break.
Yeah, because I think we might still prefer to have him on Friday, but for now there's no reason to try and rush him back quickly into Friday, particularly if he's going to continue to have outings like he had in this game.
Yeah, exactly. But in terms of notable offensive performances, it really just starts with Kalen Culpepper. Ends up going 3-for-5 with 2 runs, 1 RBI. Brady Day, of course, is Brady Day. 2-for-4, 3 runs, a walk, and a strikeout. Nick English going 1-for-2 with 2 walks. The rest of them either took offers or, you know, just were there on the stat line. You may be asking how they got 11 runs. It's just that they didn't. Any time that someone got on base, they seemingly were scoring. Only ended up stranding 5 guys on, which is massive considering this team has had, we'll say generously, struggles in clutch situations unless they have 2 outs for some reason. Maybe they just don't think that bases loaded situations are high enough leverage, so they have to wait until 2 outs, but...
I guess so. This was a interesting day, definitely, for batting. Didn't feel like we only had, 10 hits, but nevertheless, that's what we ended up doing.
Schwalbach also went 1-for-1 with a home run. I forgot to mention that.
Yep, gets his first career home run as a Wildcat. But the pitching stats, very easy. Today, only 2 pitchers, and one of them pitched 8 of the 9 innings. That's Owen Borima. He went 8 innings, had 2 hits, 5 strikeouts, 1 hit batter, no walks, no runs. Pretty incredible stuff. 112 pitches and 8. I think that we were maybe toying with the idea of trying to get him a complete game, but it's just not really worth it once you get up to 112 and you have the game in hand. But Preston Martinez, he came in and finished out the game. A little rocky. Gave up 2 hits, 3 runs, 2 earned. Got a couple strikeouts, but walked a batter. So it took him a little bit longer to get out of the game than necessary. So this game ended up being 11-3. But that was all the very, very end of the game. We had some reserves in the field as well. Maybe we weren't as focused as we should have been. But, not the biggest deal in the world other than for Preston Martinez's stat line. Borima, he deserves all the credit in the world for this performance. He was just absolutely electric. He forced 13 groundouts in this one. Kalen Culpepper and Brady Day were very busy in this game in the field because Borima was back to his old self. Because he had a couple of rough outings against Tennessee and then against Cincinnati. But he seemingly has refocused and found his stride, which if this team is going to make any sort of run, we absolutely need Owen Borima to be at his best.
Yeah. The last game that we're going to talk about for the Bat-Cats was, surprise, surprise, another comeback victory for the Cats up against Wichita State in Wichita. This one was looking pretty bad for the vast majority of it. until the sixth inning happened, where it was, before going into the sixth inning, it was a 4-1 ball game. And then K-State explodes 4-6 in the sixth inning. And, you know, Wichita State didn't go away, ended up getting another two. So it was 7-6. K-State got another insurance run in that last inning. So it was another comeback victory for the Cats, making it a little bit of their calling card recently.
Yeah, this was a game, another one where K-State really struggles out of the gate. But I think we just needed one big inning, and we took advantage when the opportunity came. And that's kind of one thing that we've been getting a little bit better at as of late, is when we do get some opportunities late in the game, it seems we've been doing a little bit better converting them. But there were still some performances that weren't fantastic offensively, but most everybody got at least something done. Chuck Ingram, he had a bit of a rough day, striking out twice to begin the game. Ended up striking out three times. He I think was probably a little bit amped, getting to face his old team, which is understandable, but kind of didn't have a great start, but still managed to get a 2 RBI double when it was all said and done. Brendan Jones went 2-for-5. He added a double as well. He was pretty good. Caitlin Culpepper, 3-for-5. Pretty good day, only one strikeout for him. Brady Day, uncharacteristic day for him. 1-for-5 in this one. But Nick English, the true freshman, came up really big again. He had a double and went 3-for-5 with 3 RBIs in this one. So Nick English, he was instrumental in K-State winning this game. Daniel Rivera, 1-for-4 in his return to the starting lineup. Pelletier, 2-for-5. And how about Caden Phillips, starting as a designated hitter, going 0-of-1 but walking three times. And coming into this game, he had not walked a single time on the season and had only had, I think, 10 plate appearances. So he drew his first three walks of the year. For some reason, K-State catcher's really good at drawing walks this year. Rafael Pelletier's been fantastic at that this season, which is kind of strange. But Caden Phillips does get credit with an RBI. It was a run walked in, more appropriately. And David Bishop, he went 0-for, but he did get an RBI on a fielder's choice. He did score a run as well off of that. Then just a strikeout. And he also had a really well-hit ball that was just hit to a deep part of the park, that if he had pulled it a little bit better, or even just gone more opposite field, it would have been his first home run of the season.
He just needed to not hit it where he did.
Yeah. So he is maybe starting to figure things out a little bit more offensively. Just needs to square it up a little bit better. But the pieces are there for David Bishop. He just isn't putting it all together yet.
Yeah.
But all in all, I mean, you can't complain too much about winning. And K-State put up 6 in the sixth, I think. Then added a additional insurance run there in the top of the ninth. But, I mean, always got to be good to be a in-state opponent. And I'm also good to get a big road win as well for the RPI.
Yeah. And I also want to point out that Brady Day probably should have gone like 3-for-5. He had a lot of tough luck.
He did. Outs. Yeah, he had a couple of liners that just ended up in the wrong spot.
Victim of a really good diving play in center.
Yeah. Brady Day, the 1-for-5 is a little deceiving. Normally, he kind of has good luck with that sort of thing, because sometimes good hitters just have really good luck. This was just not his day. For that, unfortunately, which it's bound to happen. You can't hit 400 forever. Now he's only hitting 392, so we may need to dump him. But Brady Day has really probably been the player of the season so far, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, we went into the season saying that, you know, last year Caitlin Culpepper was the most underrated K-State athlete.
It's definitely Brady Day.
Now it's definitely Brady Day across all sports.
Yeah. Although Jack Wentworth is doing absolutely everything he can to put himself in that conversation.
Yeah.
Because we both were hoping that he'd have a bounce back year, but he has far surpassed even our expectations, because we thought that this might be a good time for him to bounce back. But even still, he's just been electric.
Yeah. Which, speaking of the pitchers, which ended up with Jack Wentworth, Andrew Evans got the start today. I'm not going to say he got, like, hit around, but, you know, two innings, Three hits, two earned runs, one walk, no strikeouts, two wild pitches. Not hit around, but not a good start either. Adam Arthur, again, we're seeing a lot of him. Two innings, four hits, two earned, two strikeouts. Then the back end of the bullpen did solid with Mason Buss again coming in for a single inning.
Yeah, and doing that in four pitches?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep. Yeah, it came in for two IBs through four pitches, refused to elaborate, got the win and left.
I know it's not an immaculate inning, but surely we have some moniker for a four-pitch inning. Really good inning.
Yeah, it's just a really good inning, really efficient inning. Then Blake Dean came in through one inning, only one hit, but two earned runs based off two hit-by-pitches. And then Jack Wentworth came in, calmed everything down for the last three innings, getting his fourth save on the year. No hits, no runs, five strikeouts, no walks. What?
And 26 pitches.
And 26 pitches. Lightning efficient, lightning quick, and absolutely lethal.
He has been absolutely just phenomenal. He's leading the team in ERA right now. If you take out the guys that all have zero ERA, which the only one I would include in that is Mason Buss, because he's gone 9 2/3 and hasn't given up a run, not even an unearned run.
That is a strange fun fact.
But Jack Wentworth, with a 1.75 ERA in 10 appearances, he's gone 25 2/3, 40 strikeouts to 6 walks. on the season is just absolutely incredible. Has hit a single batter. I don't really care. But Jack Wentworth has just been absolutely incredible. He has a whip. His number's down at like a 0.66, I think. Like, he's tied for the national lead in that department because he's only given up 11 hits and 25 2/3. I mean, he's been nothing short of just special. This entire year, and I think he's draft eligible, so I think this might be it for Jackson Wentworth at K-State, the way that he's playing. I think he's almost certainly going to get drafted or get a pretty favorable undrafted deal. I would love to have him back selfishly, but I don't think we will get that privilege.
Especially if he keeps up this current pace.
Yeah, but a few other numbers for the Bat-Cats. They started the series against Missouri State, they were, I believe, 84 in RPI. And as of recording, they're 47 in RPI. So compared to last year, they are in a significantly better spot, despite a rough loss to Holy Cross, which that will count as a bad loss. I think that's a Q4. Yep. But we've only been blown out really once. I guess you can count Clemson, but that game was like not ever really completely uncompetitive.
No.
But the Tennessee game was a blowout, but their RPI is so high that it doesn't really negatively affect us at all.
What's RPI, like 5?
Something like that. They are in the top 20, I believe, and they're ranked 8th by one of the polls. But that's one of the major benefits of scheduling like that. Even if you lose a game like that, your RPI just helped out so much. And it's clear the committee just heavily relies on RPI. And we're just going to have to play that game. And sometimes we're just going to have to take an unfavorable situation and take a midweek against a really good team because they're not going to travel to visit us.
No.
So we just have to do that to help our schedule. And then we have to take care of business with our other games. And for the most part, we have done that. A couple of exceptions. Wish we would have swept Cincy. Wish we would have swept Holy Cross. But otherwise, we are generally, I would say, on schedule this year.
14-6. The only thing that might ding us is the 1-3 away record.
Yeah. That is the most difficult part, which I do think some of... we may get some grace there with, you know, a loss at Tennessee, a loss at Clemson. Really wish you can go back in time and get the Arizona State game. That was a really close one. But regardless, we really only have one awful loss. And in college baseball, you're just bound to get one.
Yeah.
Because you play so many games, you're just going to lose a game that you should. Clemson is RPI like 5 right now, and they lost 18-0 at home to a low major.
Yeah.
And a midweek. Midweeks are weird. things happen in them, and you can't dwell on them too much. But if you win them, you just be happy.
Yeah. But the next series for the Batcats is going up against Houston. Then we have a big midweek game up against Nebraska the next week, who is weirdly high in RPI as well.
Yeah, so some big opportunities. Houston is 45, so they're very near us in the RPI. And then, yeah, Nebraska's all the way up at 9. They're 15-5. But luckily, Missouri State, their RPI 50 as it stands. Wichita State is 83, so I believe they're a Q2. And they're honestly pretty solid this year.
Especially their pitching.
Their starting pitcher they threw against us was really, really good. We just really weren't able to crack them for a while. They're a team that I think will probably stay at least top 100, which is going to be good for us.
Yep. So that does it for the Batcats talk. Connor, this is the last game. We just high-five. This is the last game that we have to discuss for this men's basketball season. We're free after this. How does it feel?
I'm happy that we're done. I'm sad that we lost because I never want us to lose. But I am glad that we can feel the merciful death of this season.
Yeah, and I think that's the best way to describe the death is merciful. Ended up losing in the NIT to Iowa 91-82. Yada yada. You know, I'm only going to cover the good performances here. Day-Day Ames was a massive standout, 6 of 8 in 33 minutes, 4 of 5 from 3, ended up getting 6 points to 5 total assists. Yeah, that's pretty much all I really wanted to talk about. Will McNair, I guess. Will and Dave.
Yeah, Day-Day had probably his best game of the year with 16, and he's only gotten better as the year's gone.
Yeah.
So there were definitely some rough performances in this game. We won't really talk about them because one of them is in the portal now, and the other two... one of them isn't even able to come back, and I think the third we never thought would come back. But yeah, Will McNair, 15 from him, 7 of 10. We just kind of let McNair cook in the post, and he's a bit of a black hole on offense. When the ball gets to him, it's not the gravitational pull's too strong, it will not be coming out. But he, this whole year, despite his defensive lapses, he has been very efficient on offense. I do think that gets lost because his defense is very frustrating. Was, I should say.
Was. Yeah. We're not going to see him again.
Yeah, he's done. He had some very frustrating defense, but offensively, he was quality. Dave, he had 12. 5 of 6 from the field. Brutal 2 of 7 from the free throw line, but the two makes he had were in the same set, and that was to start his free throw shooting night. So, weird night for him, starting 2 of 2 and then missing 5 straight. It is what it is. But then he gets 7 rebounds. Buddy Rich, he only played 13 minutes. He like got hurt or cramped up or something, but went 3 of 4 from the field, 1 of 1 at the free throw line, had 7 points, 5 boards, including a really nice offensive board and then and one. He looked really good. He looked hungry, I think was the big thing. He was active, energetic. Wish we could have seen a little bit more of him. He's got a lot of his game left to develop, but he is high energy on offense. But his defense, which we have known throughout the year, but this was his most extended playing time, the defense is pretty brutal.
He's just athletic Will McNair right now. Not quite, but like in terms of you know, lightning on offense, bad on defense.
Yeah. I'm trying to, he's like, I don't know, right now he's like Dominique Sutton. Some of you know who that is. ASL, I don't think you know who that is.
I have no idea who that is.
He was a... He dunk ball.
And dunk ball.
he was from some of those Frank Martin teams. I think he was on that Elite Eight squad. But he was a high flyer. His first basket at K-State, Dominique Sutton. I remember watching it on FSN featuring Ben Boyle and Stan Weber.
Oh, my.
We missed a free throw and he flew in from behind the 3-point line and ran past everybody and had a put back dunk on a missed free throw. And I thought that was really cool. And since I was young, I thought that that happened a lot, and I haven't seen it since then. So
you were wrong. It does not happen a lot.
There were a lot of things that happened in the Frank Martin era that made me think that they were pretty normal. And it turns out, no, they're not. Like having every senior class like subsequently set the school record for most wins. No, that's not normal. having a Jacob Pullen just like set the career scoring mark. Like that's also not normal. Having the existence of Michael Beasley on your roster. That's also not normal. But hey, what are you gonna do when that's your formative years for K-State basketball?
Yeah, it's a crazy time to be alive.
Yeah.
But yeah, the season's over. And we're not, like, we've already gone over, like, yeah, this season sucked multiple times now. So I guess now the only question is how much of the roster is even going to return? We know Cam Carter isn't going to return or is in the portal. You know, technically there's like a 0.0001% chance he comes back. He won't be. But yeah. He could.
Yeah, this was a weirdly solid offensive game for K-State, but this... You and I talked about it during... It was like the K-State-Texas game in Tang's first season when we were on the road, where it was just a lot of free-flowing offense. And it was like both teams just like shook hands before the game and said, we will not be playing defense in this one. We are just here to have fun. Except we were Texas in this game.
So it wasn't as fun.
So it wasn't quite as fun. Whenever we'd go on a run, it was kind of fun for a while there. Like Day-Day had a really acrobatic layup at one point. He was shooting really well in this game. Day-Day is really turning the corner right now. I'm super, super happy with Day-Day and how he's been the last little bit. He will be a huge part of next year's team. But yeah, this is going to be a heavily new look team because McNair, Perry are for sure gone. Tamet Lindsey is for sure gone. I would imagine Cam is almost certainly gone. I don't imagine how often do you think it is, like percentage wise, like how often do people withdraw from the portal and return to their school? I'm sure there's a stat on that, but
well, if you want to be Caden Proctor,
well. Yeah, he had a pit stop before he returned to Alabama, in a manner of speaking.
In terms of what we're looking for scholarship players coming back next year, just in terms of what we have available, Cam Carter is gone, Tyler Perry is gone, Arthur Kaluma is almost certainly gone, Will McNair is gone. God, I hope Dave comes back.
Tay Lindsey was put on scholarship. And he is also gone.
Yeah, so five scholarships. Take your guess on which one of Taj Manning or Dorian Finister leaves. But, you know, we'll say six. We'll say six scholarships available, assuming one of Dorian and Taj stay.
Yeah.
That's a new team.
Yeah. But you have a young core, at least, to help build around. Day-Day is exciting.
So you only have five because you have Castillo coming in next year.
Yep. So if Castillo takes up one spot, we'll see if any freshman recruiting happens. It's never too late for stuff like that, particularly in this era. We've seen guys sign their NLI and then say, actually, no, I'm not going to do that. And then they enter the portal pretty much immediately. Ohio State has a true freshman quarterback that just did that, who was headed to Alabama, but now he's there. So it's not completely unheard of for stuff like that to happen. But the portal's already heating up. There's one benefit that comes from having a crappy basketball season is that you can start recruiting the portal a little earlier. Now, the flip side of that is that you're recruiting from other crappy teams that have already lost. But sometimes you have really good players that come from, like, low majors or mid majors that just barely miss the tournament because they don't like win their conference or something. So there's a lot of good prospects out there already.
A lot of guards.
Yeah, lots of guards, which I would love a couple of grad transfers. Quez.
Quez is coming.
He's kind of a question mark.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see if he comes back. I kind of don't care, but I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I mean he can come back or not. It won't affect me that much because I've seen that guy play one game and it was an exhibition against Washburn. And that was like for 15 minutes.
Was it Washburn or Pitt State? I think it was Pitt State and Washburn was the women's.
I think you might be right, actually.
I don't know.
Same difference.
Who cares?
Gorillas, Ichabods, it's all the same.
One has a law school. But...
The other is a gorilla.
True. But, yeah, the only thing that I'll say is if you're not subscribed to KSO, go do it. That's how you're going to get pretty much any Portal news that isn't released from, what's his name, Tipton? Tillery?
Trilly.
Trilly, thank you.
Well, she's a good follow on Twitter. Sometimes he stirs the pot a little.
Who doesn't on Twitter?
Yeah, that's kind of his job. Tipton is an on-three guy, though. So a lot of times he's a good guy to follow just to get updates on who's in the Portal officially. But he generally isn't the leaker. Sometimes he'll like put out hints or tweet emojis, which is really stupid. But I think it'll be a pretty exciting offseason for K-State because it's a big one for the staff because you're coming off what was a massive overachieving year and now a solidly underachieving year. So I think there's probably a lot of energy to get going for next season. And I'm pretty excited because there's some really interesting young players already. We got David Castillo coming in. And there's some really good players in the portal. And I think we're going to have a very exciting portal season for the men's basketball team.
I agree. So just one last note before we sign off. If you're not going to be watching the women's game, you're doing it wrong. That's it.
Just take a half day.
Take a half day. Take it. Watch it in your office if you can't go.
Yeah.
We're going to be there. It'll be fun.
Or commit time theft if you need to. Don't do that. That's not legal advice.
That's not. Nothing we say is legal advice. Any final thoughts?
No, I have none.
Go Cats.
Go Cats, I say.
Thank you all for listening to this episode of the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. If you want to follow or contact the show, you can follow us just about anywhere at @AggievilleACats. And if you want to email us, we're AggievilleAlleyCats@gmail.com. If you want to follow us on a more personal note, I'm @ACEdward00.
I'm @ConnorBaltazor, capital C, capital B.
And if you want to support the show financially, please be sure to check out the official Aggieville Alley Cats merch store or the supporters link, both in our podcast and Twitter bios. But most importantly, thank you all for listening to this episode of the Aggieville Alley Cats podcast. Where come rain, shine, or anything in between, we're here to deliver to you the Kansas State sporting news that you so love. Stay safe, Alley Cats.